What makes our country great is the legislative system put in place to protect our freedoms, with lawyers ensuring justice for our nation's citizens. Tune in as top legal experts come together to discuss all things law on The Legal Network. How you guys doing? I'm Tony Arce, and this is The Legal Network Podcast. Today, I'm joined by attorney Veronica Campos. Veronica, thank you for being here.
I'm very nice to be here.
No, we're excited, especially since, you know, we were talking, one of the things that you had mentioned, one, you're from the Chicago area, but that since the age of eight, you knew you wanted to be an attorney.
I did. So I wanted to be a nurse, and then I watched the movie called City on Fire.
Oh.
And the nurses' uniforms were dirty. And I wanted a position where I could help people and I could argue. And at that point, I decided I wanted to be an attorney, and that's been my lifelong dream.
Yeah, and one of the things that you told me that you had kind of a coach in your corner from an early age, your mom was a huge inspiration for you and still is.
Oh my God, my mom is my hero. I mean, she has been the driving force behind of all of my journeys and ventures, and always there to pick me up and inspire me. And, you know, absolutely, she's... She immigrated here when she was about 17.
Oh, wow.
So, and then she went back to school once I was in school. So I would help her proofread her college, essays, and help her prepare for your interviews because English wasn't her native language.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, so I grew up with someone like that in my corner.
Wow. And what did she go back to school for?
Well, she wanted to be a lawyer, interestingly enough.
No kidding.
But, by then she had kids and she wasn't good at math. So she went to her counselor and said, so what can I do that doesn't require math and I can do it, you know, without an advanced degree? And they told her, how about a Spanish teacher? And she's like, oh, what a coincidence. I speak Spanish. And she became a Spanish teacher.
No way.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
but still, nonetheless, I mean, from what it sounds like, she instilled this kind of determined work ethic, you know, kind of just an attitude, right? A mindset that is instilled in you that... allowed you to persevere through some of the challenges that I'm sure you faced.
Yeah, absolutely. It took me a little bit to get into law school. I don't test well, so I had to take the test a few times in the prep course. But my thought was always, if my mom, who came here without the language, without the support system, with children, with a husband that wasn't a fan of her going back to school, if she was able to push through, how could I look at myself in the mirror and say, oh, I couldn't get in. Oh, well. So yeah. I figured until the law school told me, listen, we're tired of seeing your application, stop. I was going to do it. I was going to keep doing it. And, you know, my mom was always the standard. I mean, how could I look at myself in the face, you know, in the mirror,
yeah,
knowing that I had quit before giving it everything I had?
No, I love that.
So,
yeah, that's, I mean, it's that work ethic, right? And what did you, but in your mind, when you were eight, you kind of had a different thought in the terms of the type of law,
right,
you'd be practicing, right? Tell me a little bit about, you know, how that evolved.
So I thought I was going to be the type of, like, you know, law and order, a few good men, you know. In fact, I wanted to be an attorney for the military initially.
No
right?
way, for the JAG.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, corner office. I mean, that's what I thought. I thought, you know, make partner, that's how I would validate my success, if I made partner, right? By the time I got into law school, I had my daughter.
Oh, no way.
And by then I had an online business while, you know, so I could stay home with her, and it was an eBay business.
Where do you find the time for it?
I know. I just...
You say mother, law school, and running an online business?
So,
not too bad.
It's really funny because when I had her, they gave me 6 weeks of unpaid maternity leave and 6 weeks of paid. So, of course, I was running out of money before, you know, the 3 months was up. So I had some designer stuff, and I started selling it on eBay, gifts that I got from my daughter that, you know, didn't fit her. And then I started realizing... People can be broke, but when it comes to their kids, right, they
They'll
spend
find,
it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then hunting for, you know, items to resell, I found a pair of Calvin Klein jeans with the tags on them that said that something like $11. And Calvin Klein is one of the first designers that made denim not a utility garment, but fashion, right?
Right, right.
So I found an article online and I framed it and put the jeans up for like $1,200. I paid $1.50. And I got an offer for $850.
Stop it.
For a guy, his girlfriend was in fashion design school. So I sold him a piece of design history.
It's amazing.
So
talk about marketing.
The rush, geez. You know, the rush of like, you know.
At that point, you weren't like, maybe I should think about this.
Yeah. And, you know, and then, I mean, I had found the Chanel suit at a resale shop for like $200. I listed it, sold it for $3,000. And these little nuggets of seeing, you know, how, you know, there's potential beyond just, I was an office manager at a law firm, that there was more out there. And when I applied the last time, I'm like, if they don't admit me, I'm just going to open up a brick and mortar store. I was almost like ready to say squash it. And wow. Then I got in.
Wow.
So at that point, I'm like, how can I go work for someone else and have my success limited by the nuggets they piecemeal me?
Yeah.
While I'm giving them 150% of myself.
For sure.
Right? So I'm like, well, when I graduated, I didn't have a job. I had a lot of dreams. And I figured, well, there's only one way to go up from zero, right?
Good for
you.
So
that's how we started. And, you know, I kind of laugh now at the thought that I wanted to be, you know, in the corner office. And because I realized that the validation needed to come from me. My success, I needed to validate it. It wasn't because I made partner. It was how I viewed my journey.
Absolutely.
As an attorney.
No, it always goes back to the, you know, that belief in yourself,
right,
that you were mentioning before. So with that, I mean, you opened up your own practice, right?
I did. And then my first few clients, it's funny, they would come to my office and I think the ink was still wet on my diplomas. And they would say, well, how long have you been doing this? And I would say, it feels like forever, because I'd been working with attorneys from the time I was about 17. So
you always find a way to fill it in.
Right?
You have a way with words.
So I wasn't lying. No. My diplomas were right behind me. I'm like, it feels like forever, you know? And that was the end of the conversation, you know? So then you get one client, then, you know, it starts building. But, you know, I laugh now at, you know, the things you do to kind of, right? Because I can't say, oh, well, as a matter of fact, you know, I just hung those up. I just got the diplomas right. Yesterday.
You're my first customer.
Right. And I had been divorced before. So one of my first family law clients is like, do you have any experience in divorce? I'm like, oh, absolutely.
Firsthand.
And how did it go? Oh, it's gone great. You know, again, I was being honest, yeah. Right? I you know, I'm not only the hair club president, I'm also a client, right? So
I love that.
Yeah.
And so when you decided to open, did you have, I mean, a specific type of law that you wanted to seek? I mean, obviously, when the beginning, you know, you're hungry, you're probably going to take not everything that comes your way, but probably close to everything, right?
Pretty much everything. My initial thought was to go into immigration. And I did start doing immigration. But when you're working in immigration, especially since I didn't work for someone else, when you don't get a response from UCIS or on an application, you're always sitting there worried. At least I was when I started, like, did I do something wrong?
Yeah.
And for me, this was their lives. This is, you know, my parents immigrated here. So to me, I felt the weight and the anxiety. I was on that journey right there with them.
Yeah.
And even though I got all of our applications and waiver applications approved, it consumed me because I felt that if I didn't get a favorable result, it was a failure to the client.
I could see that.
And beyond just like, oh, well, you didn't get a favorable judgment because, you know,
like you could have done everything right.
Right. And you don't get feedback. You contact to find out the status of the application and you get a canned letter, you know, it's being processed and the client's like, what's going on? Now, had I started with a firm or had previous experience in that, it might have been different. But that wasn't my journey. So I decided, well, you know, our community needs Spanish-speaking attorneys, not just for immigration, for divorce, for real estate, they need somebody that can speak their language, that can identify with them, that's accessible to them.
I think that's even more important. Like Spanish-speaking, anyone can learn the Spanish, but you really understand them and their story, and you come from that too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, and even to this day, my mom tells me, well, you should do immigration. And I said, no. I said, I found a way to serve my community, and there's different ways to serve. It doesn't have to be just in immigration.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people already doing the immigration who are in better positions and have a stronger background, right? And I think it would be a disservice, you know, to work in that area if it's not an area that I feel that I can distance myself from, because then you're functioning on the same anxiety that the client, and the client wants to come to you because they know you've got it covered, right?
Yeah, 100%. And so at that point, what did you decide that you were going to focus on? And what were your areas that in terms of practicing law?
So it just started coming where the family law cases started generating themselves. I had one guy came in. Guy was about 6'3", about 250 pounds, crying in my office. He had been raising this little boy and his daughter since the little boy was born. He wasn't the biological father, okay? The mom had a substance abuse issue. The mom got clean for a little bit, had another child, and wanted to come take this boy from him, who was now five. This man comes in with his folder full of teacher's notes and the kid's drawings. Like, he was a father. And he's like, how can I get custody? I'm like, well, you can't. And I went to a couple of my colleagues and they're like, no, he doesn't have standing. He's not the legal guardian. He's not the father. I'm like, but that's not right.
Yeah.
This man wants to be a father. So they had signed a voluntary acknowledgement of paternity, right? Even though they knew, because there was a DNA test, that it wasn't the biological father. So the lady gets an attorney on board and we start negotiating parenting time, right? Because they concede that this man should stay in their life. You have 2 years to challenge that voluntary acknowledgement of paternity. So for about a year and a half, I worked with the other attorney on a parenting schedule. And once that 2 years was up and the judge asked us, so where are we at? I said, my client wants custody of his son, because at that point it could no longer be challenged.
Right.
So my client, who was not the biological father, got custody of this child he had been raising. So that's not something that it was a technical win, right?
Right.
But it spoke to the core of what law should be.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's not about, well, he has no standing, but this is this child's father.
Yeah.
Right?
It's all he knows.
Right. And in that case, I stand by it. I think it was the right thing. You know, he still has his son. He was the dad.
What were some of those feelings going? One, I mean, obviously it compelled you to want to help, right, hearing his story. But once that decision was made, that verdict was reached, like, what was it? How'd you feel? Take me through those emotions.
Well, it was more like I felt like I had outslicked the other attorney who came from a big firm, right?
Oh, no way.
Right, because he should have filed something to preserve that deadline. And I mean, we went back and forth on agreements and continuances. So it was an absolute technical right. But one of those times when you're like, it doesn't matter. It was the right, you know.
Like in the back of your mind, you're playing that game. Like that long game.
Right.
I don't want to call it a game.
But
you get what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right. So.
That angle.
Right. And I've become a very strong father's rights advocate. And that case was one of the first ones that really made me realize there's men out here that want to be fathers that are fighting tooth and nail just for the right to be a father. And, you know, it just kind of fed itself. So.
Wow. And so at that point, did you decide, like, this is something I want to pursue and, you know, kind of start, marketing yourself in that way to letting people know that this is what you're doing?
The referrals just kind of started coming, that, yeah. Right? Because I always thought I was going to be one of those very aggressive, you know, no holds barred attorneys. And although I can be when we're litigating something, I believe in preserving the families, right? Because when they're splitting up, whether they were married or not, these are families that still have to go on living after the court case is over.
Yep.
So you know, when the clients would come to me and their case would be settled, maybe not getting everything they wanted, but enough that they could walk away and say, you know, okay, and reinvent this family unit, then they would refer me, because now I wasn't the attorney that, you know, billed them out of their house and their case lasted 5 years. Now I was the attorney that helped preserve their family, even though they were no longer under the same roof.
Yeah.
And for me, that's...
That's huge.
That's huge.
Now, part of that is that you're kind of involved in different parts of their life, so it's not just like you're doing family law, right? You're also doing real estate.
Right. So we do real estate and bankruptcy. So.
And would you say those are the three, you know, kind of areas you focus in?
Right.
Gotcha.
Right.
And where did it start with real estate? Was it just the fact that, you know, I mean, had to start somewhere. You have a story for the family law
part,
right?
I have stories. My mother and my father, they had purchased several homes, you know, and my mom said, you should do real estate because my attorney, she just shows up at the closing and collects a $300 check. $300, you know, the back rate then. Back then.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, it's not stressful. You just go get your $300 check. I'm like, okay, okay.
Like it's a handout almost.
Right. So my mentor, he taught me, attorney Lewis Powell, he taught me real estate. In fact, he sat in my first closings in the conference room in case I had a hiccup, you know. And, you know, I started getting the real estate referrals. And to this day, I have yet to show up at a closing and pick up my $300 check.
So mom had you on course. But
right, yeah, right. Yeah. She's like, but it's not stressful like family law. I'm like, oh, you have no idea.
I'm sure, I'm sure.
But, you know, because the transactions close, you know, 30, 60 days, it's a different energy than divorce cases for and sure. family law cases.
For sure, for sure. And what's the thing you love most, I guess, about your job? Now here we are, you're an adult, you've been in the business. Does it, I guess, match the expectation you had in you know, the eight-year-old version of what lawyers were doing?
It's everything I could have imagined.
Yeah?
Not the vision itself, how it would look, but the feeling, the satisfaction, the, you know, they say do something you love, right? And you'll never work a day in your life. And there's people that go to school because they think they want to be an engineer, an architect, and get there, and they're like, oh, my God, this is horrible. And I get so giddy when my clients call me doctora or leak or counsel. I'm like, oh, I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
Say it again.
So, you know, to me, it's one of my life's biggest blessings to be able to live out my dream and to enjoy it so much. So
that's amazing. I mean, congratulations on that, because just in and of itself, I mean, to realize that, right? And it, not too many people get to live out their dreams like that. And even when you were telling me earlier how that really is your identity, some people, you know, take that off and go home and they're not that person anymore, but not you.
Nope. And people that know me from, you know, church, from grade school, I don't think they could see me as anything else than an attorney either.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, they run into me, they're like, yeah, we always knew you were going to be an attorney because my personality fit well with, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only that, but I think one of the things that kind of came through when we were talking earlier was how, well, a story you had mentioned about when you first were in the courtroom and very nervous and made a mistake, you know, kind of a clerical mistake, if you will, but that it really shook you. Like it wasn't, you know, you didn't just let it go 5 minutes later. It stuck with you. And to this day, the fact that you brought it up, you know, to me says that you don't like making these mistakes when you know that you're representing your client, right? It's not about you.
Right.
But you take it so seriously and you really have a passion for this that when those things happen, they stick with you.
Right. And that was more my thing. It was a minor mistake. It was probably my first time in a courtroom. And what upset me is that I felt like in that moment, I was thinking as Veronica, the new attorney, and not Veronica, the advocate for this client.
Right.
Like I let my guard down in that sense. I showed my nerves with opposing counsel. Right, yeah. My humanity, right? We're not supposed to have that as attorneys, right? And it was really upsetting to me because, like I said, I am more myself as an attorney. So in that moment, you know, there was a crossing of, you know, my identity. And to me, it was upsetting because I was there to give my client the voice. And we did get a favorable outcome, but it just reminded me that, you know, whether I'm nervous, whether I'm tired, whether it stops being about me when we're on our cases, when we're in court, it's about the client.
Absolutely. And it seems like, I mean, just from our conversation, but that it was kind of a defining moment for you.
Absolutely.
Now, how do you translate those things when obviously mistakes happen as you're going through, you're learning, but being this person, I think you have so much wisdom and knowledge that was instilled in you. But, you know, what kind of advice do you give to others in terms of, you know, recovering from those mistakes or really seeing them as learning opportunities? Because, man, it's like you're getting a master's degree in learning from those experiences when some people can just kind of overlook it.
Well, I would say you don't necessarily learn how to not make the mistakes, but you accept that even though you're the attorney, you are still a human being, and how to deal with mistakes or any kind of hiccup, adversity, anything as it comes, because you still have to maintain. So I could have handed the document. I did. I told the judge, you know, there's a mistake. Let me amend my complaint. So I was fine there. I was good. It wasn't until I reached over into this to give him the document and my hand started shaking.
Yeah.
And that was upsetting to me because I needed everyone in that courtroom, and especially my client, to know that I had their back. Right?
Well, so it's shaped into who you are today, right? Right? And right. One of the things I wanted to ask you about was just, you know, just because obviously this is, you know, the Legal Network. I'm not an attorney, but one of the things I see is just how even in this conversation you're saying, look, I focus in these three areas, right? And while they are kind of all or can be related, you're still having to communicate that in terms of what you provide as a service. And there are definitely attorneys out there who say, yeah, they list everything they do, bodily injury, this, that, mm-hmm. you know, they just go on and on. And then there are others who are so specific, they only do one thing.
Right.
How do you navigate that in terms of that identity so that when you do speak with someone, it's, I mean, yeah, I guess I'll leave it there, right? How do you market yourself in that way?
I market myself as a resource for my clients, for my community. And I always tell them, because I don't always tell them, oh, these are the other areas I offer. But I tell them, whether it's real estate or family law, you now have a resource. Whenever you have a legal question, maybe it's not necessarily legal, you can call me. If it's not something I handle, if it's not legal, maybe I can point you in the right direction. Maybe I could refer you to a trusted colleague. So now they have somewhere to turn to instead of flying blind.
Yeah.
Right? So by doing that, they're like, well, you know, I want to file bankruptcy. Oh, that, you know, interesting. I do bankruptcy. So they come to me because they have a question or want to be pointed in the right direction. And yeah. More often than not, I'm already there for them, right?
Do you find that there is one area that kind of lends itself to the others more so than like all three? Does that make sense? Like in terms of it being kind of a lead generator that, you know, if you're getting a lot of that family law business, for example, that you'll find that real estate and bankruptcy kind of follow that? Or is it, you know, one of the others that are more of that lead generator?
I think they feed into themselves.
Mm.
Because if somebody files bankruptcy, in a year or two, they might be ready to buy a house.
Yeah.
Because now they'll get credit.
Yeah.
If they bought a house and now they're in debt because they overshot for the house, they might need bankruptcy. Maybe somebody bought a house and their relationship is now not going well and they want a divorce. So those areas just kind of
feed themselves.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess in terms of the vision for yourself versus your practice, like, are they the same? Like, do you see that, you know, I guess they are kind of hand in hand the same, right? But what would that vision look like for the future of your organization?
Well, we want to, of course, continue growing, right? And I would like to say that I would like to retire early, but honestly, so long as I'm able to go into a courtroom and I have my mind working, I'm going to be working.
Again, with your walker,
yeah,
and
yeah,
whatever it is, right?
Yeah, I said, if I ever get sick or, you know, I'm terminal, somebody better walk me to the courtroom one last time because that's going to be my dying wish.
That's right? Passion right there. That's so. Passion. But and just so in terms of growing, just kind of growing more so along what you're already doing and just seeing that evolve into the more of what
right,
it becomes?
Right. So obviously side projects like investing in passive income generating opportunities like real estate. You can't do real estate and not get the bug to invest in real estate.
Sure. That's more for you personally, right?
Right. But for the organization and for the firm is finding ways to not just be the attorney, but to give back to the community, to be a part of the community, to influence other generations and give them the opportunity to feel and taste what they can also achieve and not be restricted by limitations that have just been passed down, you know, by generations or by their own parents' perceived limitations, right? Because you need to bridge that gap. I was fortunate that I had my mother that, even though she came from nothing, she was always like, no, you gotta, you have to, and no excuses. And if you fall, you better dust off your knee and keep on moving. And if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else would. But not every person is that fortunate.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have families that they live day to day, work at a factory, nothing wrong with it. But their vision is, we got to pay the bills. What do you mean go to school? You need to start generating income to chip in. And it goes hand in hand because if you sacrifice a little bit right now, you can achieve so much more. And not just for your immediate family, right? For your children, inspiration to your neighbors,
absolutely,
your other family. And Latinos, we have such a strong history and culture and work ethic. And sometimes what we don't have is enough mentors and enough people cheering us on and pushing us, you know, and that would be my biggest goal, I think.
That's amazing. Well, I could tell you, you definitely are already, and to see more of that would just be amazing, but you're an inspiration regardless. And you know, you've inspired me in our conversations and everything we've spoken about. But you know, if you're out there listening and Veronica's someone that you want to connect with or hire as an attorney, I would strongly encourage you to reach out to her. You can do so on the form below. But Veronica, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. No, it's been a pleasure.